Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Atop the Milk Packing District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A heat advisory is issued for Portland. A shooting rampage kills four at an IHOP in Nevada. And a local Arkansas weatherman is found in a hot tub with a dead man wearing a dog collar.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, September 7th, 2011. A shooting rampage at a Carson City, Nevada IHOP restaurant today left four dead, including the shooter, and eight wounded. Of the 12 people shot in the rampage, five were National Guard members who were sitting together, all in uniform, in the back of the restaurant. Two of the service members, a man and a woman, died, according to police. Because of where the guard members were sitting and the fact they were in uniform, investigators say it appears the shooter, whose name was Eduardo Sencion, 33, could have targeted them. Information suggests that the National Guard members were sitting all the way into the restaurant along the south side. He entered through the front doors and traveled all the way through the restaurant to the back. Obviously, when five of the 11 of the victims are uniformed National Guard members, that's taken a priority interest in the sheriff's agency. The Associated Press has reported that, according to authorities, after the shooting began, Sencion marched resolutely toward a table of uniformed National Guard members before shooting each one of them and fatally wounding three of them.
How do you march casually?
Did you say kind of?
Seems like marching resolutely is a little redundant.
That's true.
One doesn't march in a laissez-faire kind of way.
That's true. Marching sort of implies a resolution, as it were. According to the Gazette, which is a newspaper, I'm assuming, Sencion was born in Mexico but had become a U.S. citizen. There was a Support Our Troops yellow ribbon decal on the blue minivan that he drove to the restaurant, though he does not appear to have had any direct connection with the military. He also had no known affiliation with anyone in the restaurant.
Just so I can inject a little levity into this on a Wednesday, am I the only one who's surprised that they haven't adopted a IHOP, therefore I am slogan at that restaurant?
Or tried to do some kind of a wacky updating it for the kids and like making the I in a lowercase I.
Well, that would just be silly, don't it?
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Wednesday. Thank you for joining us. Wednesday, September 7th, 2011 is the date. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news. Also, Science on the March. And you can get this program later on via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. And next hour at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson Radio program. That is at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The National Weather Service has issued both a red flag warning for wildfire danger in eastern reaches of Portland and a heat advisory for Portland, the Willamette Valley, Southwest Washington, and the Cascades. The red flag warning, alerting of high temperatures and low humidity that create ideal conditions for wildfire, is expected to be in effect until Thursday for eastern Multnomah, Clackamas, Marion, Lynn, and eastern Lane counties and the Cascades. The heat advisory is expected to be in effect from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. today in the Willamette Valley, the Portland area, southwest Washington, and the Cascades. Shifting winds may push wildfire smoke back into the Portland area and the Willamette Valley later today, according to a local meteorologist whose name I won't bother to mention. He said air conditions at Government Camp and Sandy were already listed as unhealthy for people with respiratory issues. People there should stay inside and keep their windows closed.
So it's according to a local meteorologist who we're going to quote, but then you're not going to say, you're just going to hot link to his quote and not actually.
Right, that's it.
Okay.
Okay, it was KGW.
Siphon the bandwidth.
It was KGW meteorologist Nick Allard.
Oh, I see. So when they get something. So when you're going to use them and not mock them, they don't get mentioned.
We can, and obviously, if none of this happens, blame Nick Allard.
All right.
He's the one who told us this was going to happen.
So there's an only mention them if there's a typo involved.
Nick Allard suggests that we should expect east winds today with sunny skies and possible thunderstorms in the Cascades. Highs in the Portland area will range from 93 to 98 degrees, with records possibly falling later in the week.
Nick Allard. That is your real name.
On Mount Hood, crews continue to battle the Dollar Lake fire. Smoke from that wildfire could drift back into Portland area later this week.
Wow.
An Arkansas weatherman is being questioned by police after he was found sleeping in a hot tub next to a naked dead man who detectives say was wearing a dog collar. Investigators have not ruled out foul play, but they have not yet determined what killed the man, who was identified as Dexter Williams. It began Monday night when KARK4 news meteorologist Brett Cummins, 33, went to the home of another man for a party. Williams was already at the house, Cummins told investigators, and he did not know him. Officer Gregory Rusi said that John Barber, the man who owned the home, told him the three men began to drink and snort drugs around 11 p.m., 2 hours later, Cummins said Williams went into the jacuzzi to have a drink. Barber later joined them, according to investigators.
What sort of party was this?
It was a three-man party with drugs and alcohol.
All right.
Barber said he left the two men in the hot tub a short time later, and he went to sleep on the couch. The next morning, around 8 a.m., Barber said he began cleaning up the home and heard Cummins snoring in the hot tub. He claims he tried to wake both men and then realized Williams was dead. When Cummins woke up, he reportedly screamed and was horrified and began to vomit, Barber told detectives. Williams was found naked in the fetal position, his face blue and purple with a chain around his neck. Apparently it was a dog collar type chain.
The party went wrong at some point, it seems like.
Yes.
Maybe it became less fun than it should have been.
And there was also a small ring of blood in the bottom of the hot tub.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that bad.
An autopsy is underway to determine what killed Williams. KARK4 News stated online that Brett is mourning the loss of a friend and would not be on air.
Okay.
I guess they're friends now. He didn't know the guy when he went to the party, but somewhere over the course of the evening, what with the drug snorting and the dog collar and the hot tub, they became friends.
So this is sort of there's a party in my anus, and you guys should be there.
You don't know that. You've known that none of that happened. They could have just been all heterosexual men enjoying a hot tub and some nose candy.
No, I was actually just inviting you to a party in my anus.
Oh, yes. No, thank you.
Okay.
Your
loss.
Yeah, really, please, no. Investigators have not ruled out foul play. Anyway, so more as that develops.
Uh-huh. What else do you think could be developing? What are the sort of details they haven't revealed yet?
I mean, we've just
gotten this. We've skimmed the surface. We've just gotten the bare rudiments of the story.
This could be one of those things where they aren't releasing even weirder details.
You're saying there could be a kinky element to this
exactly.
If they keep digging.
There could be something strange going on.
And by the way, back before this story, you were talking about the wildfires, and because you're not going to say, you really weren't going to make the observation about how being a week short in a dollar lake. Never mind. Whatever. It's fine. The next hour of the Rick Emerson radio program, that's at rickemersonshow.com. Later on this hour, about 20 minutes from now, you have your Science of the March, and then at 12:45-ish, your entertainment news. Here is Don Taylor at the desk de news.
A man taking photographs from the back of an SUV has some people on edge in the Cascades Summit neighborhood of West Lynn. Police said they received three calls on Monday morning about a suspicious silver late model SUV driven by a woman near Cascade Terrace and Lorinda Lane. In the back seat of the vehicle was a man taking pictures of children with a 35-millimeter camera. The man was described as possibly being of Asian or Pacific Islander descent. Both were described as being adults. Police said the children did the right thing by telling their parents. Even though this may not be criminal in nature, police don't want to take any chances. West Lynn Police Chief Terry Timmius said, this could be completely innocent or could be something sinister.
I'd like to, because these are undoubtedly white people talking about this, so I would, I'd like to just get them in a room and just, for my own amusement, just ask them how they, how they're certain that he was of Asian or Pacific Island descent. Yeah. Just to watch them squirm so they can inevitably just be covered in sweat and go, he had Asian eyes.
He was slanty. Slanty!
Because what else could they possibly say?
Yeah,
well, he
I
had
know.
Dark hair.
Yeah,
so
he,
do I.
He looked, he had a somewhat swarthy complexion.
Just to try perhaps. To see them, just turn themselves in white knots before they finally just go, he had almond-shaped eyes and they were cunning.
He looked inscrutable.
Boy, speaking of cunning, did you see those pictures of Cable Hashitani from the Pirate Festival?
I did, oh yeah.
Wait, you showed them to
me. I showed them to you.
Seriously, everybody we know looked some form of evil or awesome, or quite possibly both, at the Pirate Festival over the weekend.
Well, including Aaron Duran just looked kind of crazy.
Aaron Duran looked like he always does. He looks like Sulla from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then Keelan, I believe, was holding some sort of a Klingon blade while also dressed as a pirate. So
yeah.
He was, in fact, a space... I think he was a space pirate. And then Cable just looked like Raiden from the Mortal Kombat games, like that hat was about to come across the room and take off your head.
Yeah, he just looks like some kind of scourge of the East.
Seriously, he looked, I mean, he really did look just overwhelmingly awesome and sinister.
He was the most sinister, most scary looking of all the pirates I saw pictures of.
And the thing about Cable is, you know that if you'd talked to him right then, I mean, he wouldn't have broken character. He would have just glared at you, you know, sort of in an invidious fashion.
His hand would have snuck towards his sheath, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you still have the sound yesterday from Ron Paul talking about the gold standard?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask for a different sound altogether right there. What?
Ron Paul from yesterday, gold standard.
If you give me a second.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
If you give me just a goddamn moment,
okay.
Get off my back.
All right, I'll put that aside.
Christ.
Someone's a little testy today.
Jesus.
Goodness. Bicycle enthusiasts got a sneak peek Tuesday at a bike share program planned for Portland. Soon, with either a long-term membership or a day pass, anyone will be able to check out a bicycle at a rental kiosk in downtown Portland. Users will check out the bike at a docking station. The first 30 minutes will always be free. After that, there's a charge. Cyclists can return the bike at any kiosk around town.
I'm sorry, this is... What are they doing? They're just giving bicycles away to people again? Or are these rented?
Well, technically, they're renting.
Didn't we learn anything the last time we did this?
No. No,
when they all
not.
Just vanished and there was a pile of bolts on the ground?
No, we
Jesus.
Didn't.
All right.
I think in this one, you have to actually probably, like, swipe your credit card or something. There's going to be some kind of a way to make you pay for something.
Yeah, that always stops people.
Because it does say the first half hour is free, and then after that, it
all
costs
right.
money. Portland City Council voted to request $2 million in federal money for the bike share program. Another $2 million will come from private investors. Garrick Kransky with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance said, it's time for Bike Town USA to bring bike sharing to downtown Portland.
Oh, shut up.
I think it would be great if we could be the first city on the West Coast. Kransky said a bike sharing program in Portland would be the 10th in the United States. Within the next 3 years, plans were to have 740 bikes and 74 bike stations about five blocks apart from each other. Two potential vendors set up mock stations on Tuesday. They will join others in bidding for the program.
I really want to set up a station just to mock them. Not
yeah.
so much a mock station, but just to describe for me who you imagine using, and I'm serious about this, when you picture somebody using a bike rental program, what kind of person is that?
The only person I can think of is perhaps tourists who come to town and can't actually get around any other way because it's summer and we tear up all the streets so cars can't get anywhere.
See, so that's exactly what I was going to say. So barring some sort of vacation or tourist traffic, the only people who are going to use this are...
I can't think of anyone.
Wealthy, moneyed, annoying, yuppie types.
Oh, yeah.
Who
people
already own goddamn bicycles.
People who live in the damn Pearl and live in lofts and don't have bicycles.
They do. That's the thing. They've all got $3,000 bicycles they don't use already. These are just going to be bicycles we can install downtown for them to not use.
Well, yeah, and they don't have... But maybe they will use them occasionally. It's just they don't have to carry their $3,000 bikes down the stairs.
No, because you can't impress somebody with a rental bicycle.
No,
and that's what
true.
Those bicycles are for.
Yeah,
I mean... So, anyway, I don't care. I'm just going to stop right now.
I don't.
I'm going to stop. It's too early in the day.
Did you find the Ron Paul thing?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Ron Paul he released a new political ad Tuesday that takes aim squarely at Rick Perry for having endorsed Al Gore for president more than three decades ago. The 60-second television spot, which Politico reports is backed with a six-figure buy, and that Paul's camp hopes to place during Wednesday's GOP today debate, contrasts Perry's support of Gore in 1988 with Paul's own endorsement of Ronald Reagan in 1980. And the ad line says, "Now America must decide who to trust, Al Gore's Texas cheerleader or the one who stood with Reagan."
I vote for Texas cheerleaders.
Yeah, me too.
Always.
The ad is noteworthy because it's the first time a major GOP candidate has taken a direct shot at Perry in a campaign spot this year, and also because it likely signals Paul's intentions to go on the offensive against the governor during Wednesday's GOP debate in California, which is being hosted at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. Meanwhile, Ron Paul also spoke on Monday, and he said it's time for the U.S. to return to the gold standard.
Awesome.
"Our founders detested the idea and understood the danger of allowing governments and central banks to print money out of thin air, because that it is guaranteed that government will spend too much money if the politicians know that there's somebody always there to print the money. That is the reason it's in there."
You know, this all is well and good until Blofeld's synthetic gold gets in the market. Also this:
how can we spend more money if we're printing more money? There's always going to be more money if we just keep printing it.
Well, leaving aside Don Taylor's
too much money
raid on the economic system.
If you could always make more.
Moving on, here's the thing about Ron Paul. You know, he is just such a fantastically smart guy that it seems like the gold standard is too simple for him. It seems like he ought to be advocating that we're on the tungsten standard or something, you know? Or the Boglorovian standard or something. What is that thing that Karl Barks used to write about all the time? There was like some fictitious...
The guy who invented Donald Duck.
Yeah, there was like this fictitious element that he would write about all the time. It was like an unobtainium kind of a thing. It was this incredibly rare element that Scrooge McDuck was always having to gallivant all over the world to try to get the supply of. And it was from the country of Boglorovia, but it was called... Oh, God, what the hell? And I think it may have actually been some variation on the term, because it might have been Boglorovium, because it came from the country of Boglorovium. And it was one atom of it, when added to water, made 1 gallon of ice cream. And that's why it was the most valuable element on Earth. And so Scrooge McDuck was always having to go around the world to try to find it. And then, like, the Beagle Boys would steal it from him, and there was a whole thing.
Ah. Well, Ron Paul called...
Science! But not really.
Ron Paul,
not actual science.
Ron Paul called for less government intervention, including an overhaul of so-called entitlement programs.
"We're living now with a third or fourth generation that have been taught that entitlements are rights, and liberty and rights aren't have anything to do with entitlements. Entitlements means that you can take somebody else's money, you know, and the government's there to redistribute it."
Well, that's really what America's all about, is taking other people's money. Seriously.
And redistributing it so that all of our citizens have, you know, a better quality of life.
Well, I don't care about other citizens. I mean,
that's why we do it.
As long as it's other people's money coming to me, I'm okay with that. Anything else is socialism, Don.
Okay.
Anything other than me becoming richer is socialism.
Okay.
I think.
You think?
That is sort of like how anybody who makes more than me is the rich.
That's right.
Anybody who, anytime I have to give money to anybody who's not me, socialism, or quite possibly communism.
And it's just it's the government just stealing it out of your pocket.
That's right, Don.
That's right. Well,
here's the one good thing about the gold standard. The one good thing about the gold standard is, it's not even that we need gold. You can't eat gold. Gold is fundamentally useless. I mean, you know, unless you're using it for industrial purposes. It's sort of like diamonds that are really good for, like, you know, etching things and playing phonograph records. The one good thing about being in the gold standard is that there would just be a fixed amount of something. It would just be an external governor. It would be an external limiter on the amount of currency that could be created and be in circulation. That really is, as much as Ron Paul is sort of a nutcase in many ways, I think when he advocates a return to the gold standard, it's just because they want some external control on the amount of money that we can actually have. As opposed
because
to now,
despite
limited by ink and paper only.
Right, despite what I keep saying about printing more money, that's one of the reasons why we are in such huge economic dire straits, is because we just keep expanding the idea of how much imaginary money we have, and therefore it devalues all of that money. So, yes, money is only worth whatever, you know, its actual concrete value is in some particular place. And if you just keep inventing imaginary money, it loses its value. Yeah, I know. Never mind.
Okay.
So a new contest at Ottawa radio station Hot 89.9 called Win a Baby is drawing both applause and condemnation.
What's the name of the station?
Hot 89.9.
This is good. Did you say this is in another country?
It's okay. In Ottawa, Canada.
Okay.
The radio contest announced yesterday offers people a chance to win up to 3 fertility treatments at a local clinic valued at $35,000. Entrants are required to write a letter to the station explaining why they need the treatment. To qualify for the top 5, though, the women need to submit a reference from a family doctor and will have to undergo a mandatory consultation with fertility specialists.
They have to write a letter?
They need a reference from form from a family doctor. Well, they have to write a letter, like you do with a lot of these things. Say, this is why I deserve to win this prize.
But I mean, like an actual letter?
And then they need, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it can't be an email.
Like with pen and paper?
Right. They have to prove they are literate on top of everything else.
Okay.
So most Facebook and Twitter comments have praised the contest, but some people seem to have believed that it goes a little too far. I saw a photo, by the way. They have like huge ads on bus benches and things with like an adorable baby saying, "Win me."
That's fantastic.
Which is kind of cool.
It really is kind of a one man's treasure kind of a thing because, you know, just the idea like... You could, I mean, somewhere in some parallel, like a bizarro radio world, like I'm being punished by winning a baby.
Yeah.
You know, like someone's giving me a baby to ruin my life.
Like you're like the third place winner on the who could sit in the truck the longest.
Like I'm on some crazy Japanese game show and you lose, you get baby. You know, and I go, oh, crap.
And you can never, ever give it away. Ever.
Yeah.
Someone named Casey Schofield wrote on the station's Facebook page, "I think we're crossing some morality lines with this contest. Imagine telling your child you were a prize from a radio station because we had problems conceiving."
Well,
what the hell is wrong with that story?
Well, as opposed to saying, like, you know, you were created the old-fashioned way because we were playing an escaped convict and the warden's wife, and your dad had me up like a wheelbarrow on the bed. And then 9 months later, you came along.
You were our little miracle.
Seriously. I mean, obviously, how many children or just adults walking around out there right now do you think, you know, we're, you know, the product of some sort of, like rape fantasy night at the house?
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing to think about.
I was born exactly 9 months after Christmas. My birthday is September 25th, and my mother always told me that I was a drunken hump under the Christmas tree.
Seriously, well, that's what John Lennon used to say about Julian all the time. John Lennon, who was, much as I love him, kind of a dick, said Playboy magazine one time, he goes, "Well, the difference between Sean and Julian is that Sean was a wanted child and Julian was the product of a whiskey bottle." So thanks, John, ass, you know? I mean, seriously, Julian's just sitting at home with a gun in his hand, you know, and just going, "Well, all right then." So, I mean, it's...
The end product is, I mean, honestly,
babies are just, you know, kind of gross in every way anyway.
Well, yeah.
So,
but honestly, the thing is, if I was a child, I really don't see, if my parents were telling me like, okay, yes, you know, we got you through, we had to get fertility treatments to have you. Is it really a huge difference that like, A, and it was paid for by a radio station contest, or B, we just went like tens of thousands of dollars in debt, which is why you can't have shoes?
Well, I mean, you know, anything that involves dad going to a room somewhere where he has to spank it into a jar.
Yeah.
Like, how romantic could that really, like, I think any Disney-esque illusions about where you came. Also, if they can't even afford to get pregnant, like, how is it that, like, is the radio station going to raise the child as well? Because if you can't afford, like, the money just to get mom knocked
up,
it seems like maybe actually raising the child for 18 years is beyond your ken.
The way I don't know anything more about the story, but the way it would end up being interesting to me would be if they then follow this couple throughout the entire process. And they have to bring them on the radio, like, once a week or something, and the dad has to talk about going into the porn room.
That's totally what I would do.
And the wife has to talk about, like, you know, laying in the stirrups and having the things injected into her cervix.
Maybe they could do a thing like when the couple inevitably splits up, like they could compete to see who gets their child custody lawyer paid for.
I think it should be probably in the paperwork that if they split up, the child just is remanded directly back to the radio station.
He's in the promo director's closet.
He's product of CBS.
He's just there next to a pile of Toby Keith CDs and Santa Claus two shirts they couldn't get rid of.
Oh, yeah, remember that one?
Susan Reynolds, there's a package for you at the front. It keeps squalling. Take it back, please.
6 Portland Traffic Division motorcycles ran a sting in front of Alameda School here in Portland, and officers pulled over drivers speeding down the hill on Northeast Fremont, which passes in front of the school on Northeast 27th. As nearly 600 drivers across the city got tickets yesterday for speeding through school zones. 600 tickets for speeding in school zones.
Maybe we wouldn't speed through school zones if they were only school zones, you know, when school was in session, as opposed to in Metro Portland, where they are school zones 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, which means that at 2 a.m. on a Saturday, yeah, I can only go 20 miles an hour down Stark. Thanks.
Well, and well, what is it? Some of them, and if you don't live in Portland, you don't know about this, some of our school zone signs say 25 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour when school is in session. Some of them say that and have lights that flash to tell you school is in session, and it says when light is flashing. Some of them just say school zone, and it's 24 hours a day. It's like it's just completely random, whichever part of town you're in or where you're going. But the thing about this is, yesterday was the first day of school. It was fairly well publicized that yesterday was the first day of school. It was fairly well publicized that there were going to be extra cops everywhere.
Right. Well, and also you just sort of know. I mean, if you've been driving.
And they're marked school zones.
Also, there are children everywhere, so that should be a giveaway.
So 600 people were stupid enough to actually speed in school zones in front of cops yesterday.
Well, maybe they just got out of a screening of Death Race 2000 and they...
Alameda is the largest elementary school in Portland with 788 kids in grades K through 5. Many walk to school or ride their bikes. One teen driver was in tears after officers pulled her over for going 31 miles per hour. With the special school zone speed, she faced a possible speeding ticket of $251.
Well, let's be honest, she didn't face that fine.
Yeah, her parents did.
Yeah.
The officer planned to check her driving record before deciding whether she would get a warning or a fine.
Well...
So,
it's the Serengeti plain out there, kids. Walk carefully.
Man. A new survey finds the use of aluminum in building cars and light trucks is at an all-time high. Alcoa's Randall Sheps says it coincides with the introduction of new federal fuel economy standards.
Alcoa, who I always hear as Alcoa, because they were the sponsor of all of these classroom films that I had to watch when I was growing up. What is this cut?
Automotive One.
I think what you're seeing is that automakers realize that combining advanced powertrains with lightweighting of the vehicle is the right way to get to those increased fuel economy standards.
Maybe I can finally get my Corvair out of storage and be wheeling it around town.
Shep said the use of aluminum adds more to the cost of the vehicle up front and, of course, you know, increases your risk of getting Alzheimer's later, but allows for greater consumer savings down the road.
I think if you're rubbing the car underneath your armpits every morning, that's probably true.
Well, like,
otherwise, you're just sitting on the seat part of it.
You don't lick your car?
Well, sometimes.
You save on fuel, but then you'll also save on the cost of the powertrain and the cost of some of the other components as you take weight out of the body.
This car is made out of balsa wood and goes fast as the dickens, though.
When I lived in Southern California, I was very disappointed when Alcoa took over another aluminum foundry that was there that was called American Can, because every time I drove by it, my first husband and I would just start singing really loudly, "We are American Can! We are American Can!" And wanted to know why they never used that as like maybe, you know, a theme.
I don't know.
I just commercials.
American Can sounds like some sort of a chant outside of like a retarded school.
We're coming to your town. We'll help you party.
Nah, see, we're going.
We are American Can.
Nah, two different ways we're going there.
Yeah, see.
Somebody says, I like how they don't figure out how to make engines more efficient. They just find paper-thin metal that kills us during accidents.
Yeah.
This is, what we got here is the Chevrolet Shard. This is going to be a big, big seller this year.
It's made out of thin aluminum and balsa wood.
Yeah.
A power surge that recently shut down websites and email for the state of Washington will end up costing the state about $500,000, according to a new government cost estimate. The Department of General Administration estimates it will cost about $130,000 just for a new electrical vault switch. Other costs include generator fuel, worker overtime, and a new consultant, according to the state officials. I guess the old consultant didn't do a very good job since all of the websites and the email shut down in a power surge.
Yeah.
The electrical surge forced a hard shutdown of the state's data center.
Buy a power squid. Or not. I don't know. Or just, you know, one of those things from, you know, from Fred Meyer.
How did this morning go so fast. We have to do science.
It is 12:28 here. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. And later on this hour, your entertainment news. Coming up right now, your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com or facebook.com/Squires Electric. Where was this power outage at?
Washington State.
See, so if only they had called Squires Electric to... This wasn't the whole place, though. The entire joint. The entire state.
It actually shut down websites and email for the state of Washington, the actual official
government. Actual government.
The government.
See, so that is a physician heal thyself kind of a thing.
Yes.
Because really, honestly... don't they hire people to... I mean, they must get some guy out there who goes, well, this is, here's your problem, and points to a thing where it's like they've just got a cable going out the window, and they're all they're just pirating, power from Calgary or something. There's just one big thick orange extension cord coming over the border from Victoria.
And a moose chewed through it, and then boom, they lost everything.
Yeah, and they go, well, somebody kicks this out, though, crossing the border. If somebody, is coming from, somebody's on Puget Sound, it's all going to go to hell.
I think that's why they said, we're going to hire a new guy.
Yeah. You can contact Squires Electric for your electrical needs. That is squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. Or you can call 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric, proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March. Here is Dawn Taylor.
For the first time, astronomers have detected ozone on Venus. The molecules were spotted in the upper atmosphere of the planet's night side by the European Space Agency's Venus Express spacecraft. There's a Venus Express spacecraft, which I guess is the one that gets places faster.
You have to pay more for it, though.
The concentrations match what's expected to arise from chemical processes involving chlorine, just as on Earth, but the amount of Venusian ozone is far lower than Earth's. Because levels of ozone and ordinary oxygen molecules are closely linked, studying ozone on Venus could help researchers spot signals of habitability or even life on alien worlds. This has been reported in the upcoming journal Icarus by an international team. Astronomers have also discovered a chemically primitive star that challenges standard views about how stars are born. Theory suggests that stars less than 0.8 times the sun's mass can't form until old enough stars explode to enrich the nearby space with elements heavier than helium.
Just to back up for a second. In the journal Icarus.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually have a space journal that is about failing to fly successfully.
Or
it's about crashing on your attempt at flight.
Or you could think it's about having hope and dreams and goals.
It's really not about that. It's about crashing. That's what the story of Icarus is about. It's not about hope.
It's about hubris.
Yes. And hubris as personified by Icarus, who...
flew too close to the sun.
And then his wings melted and he crashed to Earth.
Right.
So we have a space exploration journal that is about crashing. Named
Pretty
after
much,
crashing.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. Wanted to make sure I wasn't hearing that wrong. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead with whatever you were talking about.
So anyway, this primitive star, which is dubbed, and you might want to write this down so you can remember it, SDSS J102915+172927.
Damn it, I was just going to name something that.
Yeah. Turns out to exist in a part of the Milky Way's halo that doesn't have the heavier elements, and so the star, too, is made almost entirely of hydrogen and helium. Primitive stars can thus form in places scientists didn't expect them to. This has been written up by a woman named Elisabetta Kaffau from the Center for Astronomy in Heidelberg and the Paris Observatory. And that is in the September 1st Nature.
The Center for Pointy Names.
Yes. So, in one part of your brain, Rick Emerson, a bathroom equals a toilet plus a bathtub. In mental terms, certain scenes are sums of their objects, according to research who reported in the September 4th Nature Neuroscience. The results help explain how people quickly and accurately recognize complicated scenes such as playgrounds, kitchens, and traffic intersections. Much of what scientists know about vision comes from studies of how people see simple objects in isolation, such as a line floating on a white screen. This is according to cognitive neuroscientist Dirk Bernhardt Walther of Ohio State University. This new work, in contrast, deals with messy real-world scenes. Bernhardt Walther says, quote, "It's an awesome study."
I don't understand what the study's about.
Well,
still.
A number of different brain areas are involved in telling us where we are, each relying on different types of information. In cases where the general outlines of a place offer little information, it appears that the brain hones in on specific objects within the space. A bathroom and a kitchen may have similar three-dimensional shapes of the interior, but the objects will tell your brain what the difference is in the room. McAvoy and Russell Epstein of the University of Pennsylvania measured the brain activity of 28 people viewing four scenes: a bathroom, kitchen, street intersection, or playground. Participants then saw isolated objects associated with each scene, allowing the researchers to record the neural signature of each object. They focused on a particular part of the brain called the lateral occipital cortex, which responds to objects in previous studies. When combined, the signatures of single objects closely matched the brain receptors to entire scenes. For instance, the average response to a stove and a fridge matched the response to the entire kitchen. So basically, they're coming to the conclusion that, you know, you walk into a room and your brain says, you know, toilet, sink, bathtub, and brain goes bathroom. Because it's just, you're recognizing the objects within an area.
I'm sorry, I just wish I was high. This would be hilarious.
So yes.
All right.
And that's how we tell the difference between places.
Okay.
So there you go. It's by the stuff that's in it. Yeah, okay. The idea of infecting Mars with our germs is nothing new, but one microbiologist believes the next Mars rover may have a higher chance of becoming a microbe lifeboat. Andrew C. Scherger of the University of Florida and Space Life Sciences Lab at NASA has been carrying out tests on models of the Mars Science Lab, known as Curiosity, and found that the novel landing maneuvers and the particular wheels on the rover basically increase the chances of contaminating Mars with bacteria more than any other previous surface mission. Scherger points out that should any bacteria survive the sterilization processes before Curiosity's launch and the vacuum and the freezing cold of space for 10 months, the long-term microbe survival rate is pretty grim. Mars, after all, is humming with radiation and bathed in bacterial-killing ultraviolet light. So it's unlikely that any microbes we send, you know, if we do, would actually live. However, they did find previous Mars rovers, the Pathfinder Sojourner in 97 and the exploration rover Spirit and Opportunity in 2004, arrived on the surface using airbags. Once the bags were deflated and landers righted themselves, the landers opened, revealing the rovers on raised platforms. So the Curiosity's landing on the Martian surface will contrast greatly. After entering the atmosphere, parachute jettisoned and heat shield ditched, the large rover requires something more powerful to control its landing. We have talked about this, the much-discussed sky crane.
Yeah, it like lowers, it's like on a winch, it lowers it down.
It's a rocket-powered platform, will lower it down. And this is the first time the Mars rover will use its own wheels as landing gear.
Well, they have to sterilize it because otherwise they won't, and that's the whole thing, is because they won't be able to distinguish. It's less about how we don't want to gunk up Mars with our stuff. We don't care about that. We want to be able to, like, to spot something and not go, look, there's life, and then realize it was something that somebody had on their shoe when they were, like, packing the thing up, you know, and sticking the parachute inside. Especially because when, so they've discovered this, actually, that the things we actually took to the moon, still, like, the bacteria from Earth were able to survive when exposed to the vacuum of space on the moon for extended periods of time. So it's not like being in the vacuum of space kills stuff. I mean, there's bacteria from Earth that are able to survive in a completely vacuumed void of space. So,
well, this whole thing with the difference in the way this rover is landing is the problem with the wheels, because apparently Sojourner, Spirit, and Opportunity all had a period of time sitting under the sun being baked by ultraviolet light before it actually came into contact with the soil. In this case, the Curiosity is going to go directly and make immediate contact with the soil as soon as it gets to Mars. And so if any bacteria have survived the trip, they're within the rover's wheels and the tread of the wheels. It's going to, like, just go straight onto Mars.
Awesome.
So we may be destroying Mars.
Excellent. Well, I mean, it was next.
Yeah.
I mean, it
I mean, it's what we do.
I mean, really, its turn was coming eventually.
And finally, dolphins do not whistle, but instead talk to each other using a process very similar to the way that humans communicate.
Who said that dolphins whistled?
I don't know. Well, they sound...
Somebody who's never looked up the dictionary definition of whistle, clearly.
Some of them sound like whistles. Some of them sound like the, you know, flipper noise, but some of them...
I have never heard a dolphin say anything that sounded like whistling. All I hear is that...
Well,
that's
they do a whistly noise too.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. They don't have lips, so.
No. Well, it's produced. The whistle sound is produced by tissue vibrations, analogous to the operation of vocal folds by humans and many other land-based mammals.
Whistling doesn't come from the. Okay.
Well, I'm just telling.
That's
you.
Somebody who. Okay, whistling. Whistling is done with your lips, not with your vocal cords.
They do also make a high-pitched sound that sounds vaguely like a whistle.
Mm.
Anyway.
Somebody's straining to make a story over here.
They have figured out that the resonance frequency of some air cavity is what we're doing when we're whistling. When dolphins dive, the air cavities are compressed due to the increasing ambient pressure, which means they would produce a higher and higher pitch the deeper they dive if they actually whistled. But it's not whistling, even though it sounds to us sometimes like a little bit like whistling. What they're doing is making this this weird noise that they figured out by digitizing and reanalyzing recordings of a male bottlenose dolphin. Basically, the dolphin breathed in a heliox mixture consisting of 80% helium and 20% oxygen, which is a concoction that causes humans to, you know what happens when you breathe helium. The reason they did that is because the mixture has a sound speed that is 1.74 times higher than normal air. If a person whistles after sucking in helium, the pitch of the tune will be 1.74 times higher than if they whistle breathing in just air. According to the researchers, they found the dolphin does not change pitch when it produces a sound in heliox, which means that its pitch is not defined by the size of the nasal air cavities, and hence it is not whistling. Rather, it makes a sound by making connective tissue in their nose vibrate at a frequency it wishes to produce by adjusting the muscular tension and the airflow over the tissue. So, which means they are actually making deliberate sounds at deliberate pitches that are not dependent on, like, air pressure or anything like that. In essence, they are modulating their speech in a similar way to humans do.
Whistle. To emit a clear, high-pitched sound by forcing breath through the small hole between one's teeth or lips.
Mm-hmm.
Dolphins don't whistle. They never did.
What about actually the sound of a whistle? A whistle
that's replicating the sound of a whistle,
and yet it's called a whistle.
And
it's
right,
and it's called whistling when you blow a whistle
because it's mimicking a human sound.
But it doesn't have lips, and it's still called a whistle.
Yeah, but it's not whistling. Mm. It is replicating a thing that you could do. I could tape record you. The tape recorder doesn't have lips either.
And
so
say,
that's
a whistle.
It is replicating a sound that you can make. So this is, we need to come up with some different term for it. This is like that thing where they were trying to say the mouse was singing. Mice don't sing. I mean, it might go, you know, and make a gizmo type noise or whatever, you know, like the Mogwai, you know, rocking back and forth because it's cold outside noise. That is like an anthropomorphization of the noise. We are attempting to force a human behavior onto dolphins. I mean, they're doing something that's pretty impressive that we couldn't do. But I think by the same token, to say that it's whistling is, and they're just like us. Because I think we eventually want to train them to play Parcheesi or something.
The point of the story is that they make some sounds that sound like whistling, but it's not whistling.
Right. I just told you that.
Well, yeah.
I could have told you that before the story. I could have told them that before they conducted the study.
I don't think you were actually listening to the point of the story at all.
I was. They choose a frequency at which to make an internal resonance inside their internal nasal cavity, and then they create something, but it's not whistling.
Right.
I could have told them that like a year ago. Seamus could have told them that. Noah Webster probably could have told them. I'm seeing it. I could save them money. Where was this study done? Was it was this a domestic study?
Because
we don't have money. See, we don't have money to be wasting on these things. From now on, I demand that they come to me and ask me these questions. You come and you ask me, and quite possibly someone smarter than me, and we will give you the answer. And that is all ye need know.
Okay.
Science! Do we have more?
God, no.
Science! On the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. We should demand, yes, well suggested, so we should demand a science grant for this show. That's it. I'm going to go to the government right now like Mr. Smith, and I'm going to demand that there be money forked over for the Legion of News audience and hosts to study science and to come up with. And here's the other thing. I should become Pope, and then it would be a lot easier. And then our word will be law.
Okay.
Like when, you know, when we just determine something, we say, like, and this is the way it is. Siamese twins joined at the hair. Bam. Chickens can't fly. Bam. And then, you know.
And can it be like olden times that if someone dares say otherwise,
we can
put them to death?
At the stake, Dawn.
All right.
Science of the March brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. I'm just trying to help the economy function. I'm just saying, give us, you know, just stop by the studio on the way, you know, to petition for grant money, and we'll tell you if, we'll give you the answer that you're looking for. All right, that is your Science on the March for Wednesday, September 7th, 2011. Here's Don Taylor.
National Lewis University, I'm not sure where that is, but it's called Lewis University. Oh, it's a private university in Chicago, announced on Tuesday that they would become the first university in the country to offer one of Groupon's daily deals in an effort to boost interest among potential students. The deal is for a graduate-level introduction to teaching course and will go for $950. That's almost a 60% discount on the usual $2,232 price tag for a three-credit course at the school. The class was custom-made for the Groupon audience and is only valid for new students. Those considering enrolling must have some sort of undergraduate degree, but the course is designed for those with little or no background in education. Completing the course does not guarantee admission to a degree-earning program at the university, and those who do go on to pursue a graduate degree at the school will still need an additional 33 credit hours at the usual price. Jocelyn Zivin, Vice President of Marketing for the university, told the Chicago Tribune, "There are all kinds of factors in the K-12 world that are really discouraging teachers and people seeking teaching degrees. We'd like potential students to understand what the realities are."
Is that something you're going to put on your resume, that you went to, like, Groupon U or something? That you went to literally a discount college?
You know, one of the biggest reasons that people are discouraged from becoming teachers is because the pay is terrible and people want to actually earn some money. If you haven't really decided to be a teacher and you haven't really decided where you're going to go to school and you're just kind of feeling it out, are you going to drop $950 on a maybe class?
You're just doing like a sort by price. Ooh, half off. What's this teaching?
Yeah. As of this afternoon, though, Groupon's website said the deal is indeed on after at least 15 people bought it.
Quick, redeem it now before they go bankrupt.
If supplies last, prospective students have until Saturday night at midnight Central Time to sign up. Only 25 of the deals were slated to be released. But this being Groupon, you know, they could do 400 of them and just screw the school.
I really don't know which would be more depressing. People not taking them up on that offer to become teachers, or people taking them up on that offer to get a Groupon for a teaching class.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, the deal expires on September 14th and the first class is September 26th. The course is a seminar that will cover everything from political influences on education to developing a personal approach to teaching. And it will meet for 3 hours on Monday evenings through early December.
Okay. But then you still have to actually go to, like, a real school somewhere to get your degree.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The city of San Francisco is cracking down on public nudity. The issue is less about modesty and more about cleanliness. This may come as a surprise, but it is not illegal to walk around without clothes in San Francisco. Sitting down, however, may be another issue. George Davis, who is a fellow who likes to walk around naked, apparently in the Castro district, says, "I am kind of a weather opportunist." He says he and some of his friends will hang around naked on warm days near the corner of Market and Castro.
Let's get our penises out and walk through the Tenderloin.
San Francisco Supervisor Scott Wiener introduced legislation Tuesday that would require nudists to cover public seating before sitting down and to cover themselves before entering restaurants.
Okay.
Wiener said, "This legislation is not about whether to ban or not ban public nudity. It's a basic public health measure."
All right.
Yeah. Wiener's proposed legislation must still undergo full scrutiny in a committee and then public hearings, since no food. If you can walk around naked all you want in San Francisco,
you just can't put your genitals on.
But they're now going to try and make it so you can't rest your junk on public seating.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's not like you can go licking doorknobs anywhere either. So, it seems like it might be fair.
You just shouldn't.
Yeah, you ought not to. They prefer that you not do that.
And by the way, I'm just going to say this real quick. I saw Contagion last night.
Yeah, I saw your thing about
that. And I'm never licking anything in public or even, like, you know, touching doorknobs without sanitizing again as long as I live.
So we've missed our shot at having you lick things.
Yes, okay. That is never going to happen.
All right, that window has closed.
Yes. It remains unclear if alcohol consumed at a fraternity party contributed to the death of 18-year-old Anne Heffron, but in the wake of the UCF, University of Central Florida, freshman's death, the university's fraternities are going dry. The University of Central Florida's Greek Council has decided to bar alcohol from fraternity and sorority events until further notice, effective yesterday. However, events that were already registered and approved through USF Fraternity and Sorority Life through 5 p.m. on September 2nd, we're allowed to proceed as planned. Heffron was rushed to Florida Hospital East in the early hours of August 25th after she was found unresponsive in her on-campus apartment. She was later pronounced dead. Authorities said Heffernan attended a Sigma Chi fraternity house party before her death. Alcohol was served at the party, a violation of university policy. UCF officials have said they do not know if drinking played a role in Heffernan's death. They're awaiting results of a toxicology report. University has already ordered Sigma Chi and Delta 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 to cease social activities during the investigation. Officials said the fraternity had not gotten approval for the party.
It is 12:48. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is next hour. Today we have, is that accurate over there?
Yes, taser, corpse, and something else. Penis. There's a penis watch.
Taser watch, corpse watch, penis watch, and a recap of Sunday's episode of True Blood, as well as last night's season premiere of Sons of Anarchy. That is season 4, episode 1 last night. So we'll get to that today, or we'll make a full faith and credit attempt.
We'll try.
Getting at that. So here is Don Taylor.
Entertainment, please.
Huzzah! Zoot Allures, it's your entertainment news for Wednesday.
The Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences has announced that the host of the 84th Academy Awards will be Eddie Murphy.
What was that? What was that duck face you just gave me there?
Just Eddie Murphy. One of the awards shows two producers this year.
It's like just saying his name made you tired somehow.
Everything about this story makes me tired. Let me continue.
Is it because of Tower Heist? Is that why they've gotten him to do this?
Actually, Tower Heist looks kind of entertaining.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
because
I'm sure that's probably it.
He is believed to be on the comeback.
Yes.
Again.
Again, sure. So one of the award show's two producers for this year, Brett Ratner, said in a statement, Eddie is a comedic genius, one of the greatest and most influential live performers ever.
Awesome.
With his love of movies, history of crafting unforgettable characters, and iconic performances, especially on stage.
Yeah.
Oh, God, the clumps. I know he will bring excitement, spontaneity, and tremendous heart to the show that Don Mishner and I want to produce in February. The release is quick to note that Murphy is himself an Oscar nominee, a title he earned for his supporting role in 2006's Dreamgirls. The show is slated for February 26, 2012.
I mean, as always with Eddie Murphy, it's not even that, I mean, I just sort of assume that he'll show up and not actually try. I mean, that's the thing about Eddie Murphy, is like, he's just...
And he'll do his laugh a whole lot. I hate that laugh.
I suppose if he's Rosie O'Donnell.
I love him as Donkey in the Shrek movies. I will say that.
Which laugh are you doing right there
when
you
just did that? Is Eddie Murphy laugh?
Oh, no, you're talking about the thing where it sounds like he's inhaling.
Something like
that. Yeah, no. I don't think anybody can do that but him. Yeah. The thing about Eddie Murphy is that is the curse of being so phenomenally talented that you just sort of... I mean, it really is like... It's like he's just trying to do everything with just his pinky most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, he can't even be bothered to stay... Not even phoning it in. He's just sort of nudging the phone with his pinky over to someone else. And you make the call there. I can't do that. I mean... As opposed to people who get out there, some people get out there, they really try to be good, and they suck. Like, he just sucks because he doesn't try.
No, not at all.
That's
not
the thing with
remotely.
Eddie Murphy. Yeah.
Music legend Les Paul is getting a new granite memorial to mark his gravesite in southeast Wisconsin. His family and friends are planning a public dedication ceremony on Saturday at his grave at Prairie Home Cemetery in Waukesha, Wisconsin. The Les Paul Estate commissioned Rock of Ages of Vermont to design, build, and install the 500-square-foot granite monument. Ford Construction of Waukesha laid the foundation, and New Eden Landscape Architecture of Milwaukee designed it, the landscaping. The site will include granite slabs containing Paul's biography.
So you're really saying that Les Paul's grave is covered in rock?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go to the cemetery, be ready to rock.
Awesome.
Nicknamed the Wizard of Waukesha, Paul created the first solid body electric guitar.
This is Waukesha, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Are we talking about Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Waukesha.
Yeah. And developed technology and recording techniques that set the standard in the industry, like tape echo, multi-track recordings, and overdubs. Paul died in 2009 at the age of 94.
Waukesha, I believe, is one of the co-stars of That's So Raven.
Oh, there we go.
I'm just making that up, though. That's not really true.
I'm dropping something in the Dropbox for you so you can see this.
Quickly.
I'm trying.
Faster.
It's not moving.
Work better.
It's not going. It's not happening. Where did it go? There it is. Okay. That is a visual aid for this story. Less than a month after her surprise wedding, Tara Reid seems to be firmly rooted in newlywed bliss. She tweeted on Monday, I just saw my husband. He surprised me in London. Amazing! Many exclamation points. That evening, Reed...
What do you mean she just saw her husband in London? What, was he missing?
Apparently he was in...
There he is with some whore.
He was in London for something and he just showed up and I don't know. That evening, Reed, 35, and Zach Kiyoff, her husband, were spotted dressed up for a night out at C Restaurant in Mayfair. And we have the photograph of that dressed up for the night out. And oh my God, she is a terrifying bag of antlers.
Yeah, does she still have the weird plasticky face going on?
She is so, so scary looking. And she looks like she's just about to snap in half.
I'll get that. That'll be up here in a...
I've seen healthier Auschwitz photos.
A short while at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids, September 7th.
The actress will appear in the latest American Pie installment, next year's American Reunion. And she was recently booted from the UK's Celebrity Big Brother. But after seeking a pub to dine again with Kiyoff on Tuesday, she turned her attention to...
You're having a stroke over there?
I don't know how you pronounce his name. But she also tweeted, I'm on Portobello Road in London, just went shopping, All Saints. Because her typing is apparently horrible. So yes, check out that photo of Tara Reid because it's shudder-inducing. A former Price is Right model is suing two of the show's producers for sexual harassment.
Again?
Claiming one verbally accosted her in a dressing room while she was naked and exposed. Lanisha Cole, the longest tenured model on The Price is Right, filed a lawsuit today in L.A. County Superior Court accusing producers Michael Richards and Adam Sandler, coincidentally, not the actors.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Michael Richards and Adam Sandler, but completely different ones.
Okay.
They produce The Price is Right, of harassing and abusing her in the workplace.
Is this that hot black chick?
I believe so, yes.
All right.
On one occasion last year, according to Lanisha's lawyer, Sandler barged into her dressing room to berate her for not wearing a microphone. And at the time, she said she was completely naked and exposed, except for a very sheer thong bikini underwear bottom. According to a lawyer, Sandler proceeded to loudly chastise Lanisha in front of the other models without even trying to turn away or avert his eyes from her nakedness.
Well, that doesn't really sound like sexual harassment. That sounds like...
That sounds like the opposite of sexual harassment. Like, I'm not even noticing you're naked. I'm so pissed at you.
Seriously, like you're so incompetent, I'm not even going to bother to ogle you. I'm simply going to get right to the yelling.
Yeah, that is the opposite of sexual harassment.
I'm doing it wrong.
So anyway, she wants a paycheck seeking damages for wrongful termination because they fired her eventually, too. Sexual harassment, false imprisonment, intentional infliction of emotional distress. And host Drew Carey has not been involved in this in any way whatsoever. No. Which is kind of interesting because you would think Drew Carey would be kind of harassy with models.
No, I think he just sits in his green room a lot drinking.
Rolling around on his couch covered with money.
Yeah, be my
and
guess.
Weeping quietly.
Yes.
Green Day's lead singer was reportedly booted from a Southwest Airlines flight on Thursday because he was wearing his pants too low. According to ABC News, who had a producer also on the flight, all the passengers were already seated. We were ready to go. They had already told us to turn our cell phones off. When a flight attendant asked, Billy Joe Armstrong. asked him to pull his pants up. Armstrong reportedly answered, don't you have better things to do than worry about that?
Clearly the answer is no.
Seemingly, which is a good question, I think. An argument ensued, and the singer along with a companion were removed from the plane. He then tweeted his frustrations to his nearly 170,000 followers. Southwest responded via Twitter, apologizing for the singer's experience and saying the company's customer relation team would follow up with him. This is not, by the way, the first time someone has been kicked off the flight for having their pants too low. University of New Mexico football player Deshaun Marmon was arrested for a similar incident in June, and he fought back. The charges against Marmon were eventually dropped. Twitter is becoming a common venue for customers to reach airlines with their complaints and for airlines to try and deliver customer service. In the wake of Tropical Storm Irene, customer service ratings company Stella Service compared response via Twitter to call wait times. And frankly, Twitter is winning by a landslide.
You got like 36 seconds here.
Okay. James Franco is going to Broadway. He's going to start a production of Tennessee Williams' Sweet Bird of Youth. To Mark Franco's Broadway debut would have created one of the hottest tickets of the season because he was going to be paired with Nicole Kidman. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. The story is that was going to happen. He was going to do Sweet Bird of Youth with Nicole Kidman, but now he is not going to be doing it. So if you're planning to buy tickets for Broadway to see James Franco do Tennessee Williams, you're going to be sad because apparently he has other things to do.
This was like two stories in one. It's like you did the story and then you did the undoing of that whole story.
I know. It's like I got up your hopes, and then I dashed your hopes.
It's what we do. Like you were hoping the hour would go on forever, and yet, no, it's over. bringing down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. We will be back again tomorrow at noon with another episode. Until then, we thank you for listening. Don't forget, we come to you live each and every weekday at noon from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agle, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at RickEmersonShow.com, featuring a Taser Watch, Corpse Watch, and we were talking about last night's episode of Sons of Anarchy and Sunday's episode of True Blood. Until then, thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you?